Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Aware Show. This is Lisa Garr. Great to be with you all this afternoon. Got a great show set up for you all. So sit back, listen wherever you are. Just want to mention first that we do broadcast the Aware Show in various places 6 days a week. So if you want to take a look at where else we're on, you could go to our website, which is theawareshow.com. And we have teleseminars on the week. Days, we have TV shows, all sorts of great stuff. So it is all wonderful programming, all great guests, and all there for empowering you, which is our daily conversation. And that is what we're talking about today. So I want to address the women out there right now. And men, this is for you too, if you think this about the women in your life. Okay, so this is one of the best mantras I've ever heard of the average Western woman. The average Western woman's mantra: I eat too much, I diet too much, I drink too much wine, I give too much, I buy too many shoes, and I'm still not satisfied. Is that anyone out there listening? Does that sound like you or someone you know? Well, my guest today, Christine Ariello, is the author of a book called Madly in Love with Me, and it's about the daring adventure to become your own best friend. And she is joining me to talk about what it means for women to stop overgiving to everyone else and to actually give to ourselves. Welcome to the show, Christine. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm actually up in Washington looking out at a lake and Mount Rainier and just taking in a breath. I've been out on tour for the last 4 months, so I'm actually receiving myself today.
Relaxing
a bit.
What is up with that? Why do women give and give and give, and then when they've given too much, they give some more? Why is that?
Well, as far as I can tell, and I've done a lot of thinking about this because I'm a recovering achievement junkie and doing addict and overgiver and overdoer. And when I was writing my self-love book, I just kind of sat with that question of, like, I don't understand. Like, why are we so programmed to give and give and give and give and give and give until there's nothing else left, right? We're kind of like banks that only give withdrawals, never take in deposits. And the answer that came to me was, I think that most of us have been growing up with what I call the self-sacrifice handbook. And this is a handbook that I think has been passed down for generations, like a bad set of china, to like grandmothers, to mothers, to mothers, to daughters. And it basically has told us that in order to be a good woman, you have to give. And its mantra is, it's better to give than receive. So our self-worth really is tied to how much we give, not how much we receive. So if we're not giving, we don't feel like we're doing or being enough.
Well, now, what's wrong with giving, though? I mean, you would think giving, you know, of your time, volunteering, donating, helping others, it's a very honorable thing to do.
Yeah, well, the problem with that phrase, it's better to give than receive, is not in the word give. When I was writing Madly in Love with Me, I was, whenever I write a book, I go and I have like this special room in my house. I call it my temple room, and I have markers in there and pillows, and I kind of go in there and become like the mad scientist. And my husband, Noah, is my first line editor. And I was writing about this like conundrum of why women are such overgivers. And I say to Noah, who wrote this quote that it's better to give than receive? Because they're wrong. Like, this is clearly just incorrect. And Noah walks into the room, and he kind of pokes his head into the door, and he said, Christine, I hate to break this to you, but Jesus said that.
Yeah, compete with that.
Yeah, and Lisa, I'm like, well, I can't very well like write in my book, Jesus was wrong, and that's not going to go over very well. So I sat for a second, and I said, you know, Jesus, the JC, he was very into love. He was very into abundance. I just believe that this is one of those lost in translation issues. And if we just take that middle word, than, and change it to and, it's better to give and receive, we actually would create a value equation for women and for men and for all of us that actually allowed us to fill ourselves up as well as give to other people.
That's a good point. So why? Okay, so we're giving, give me a typical example of what it means to overgive as a female.
Yeah. Well, it happens all the time, and I'll give you an example. So most of us do what I call serving from our reserves. And serving from your reserves means that you are giving to people energy that you don't really have to give. So it's just like with money, right? It's like it would be like, you know, giving money and borrowing money out to people when you aren't even able to pay for your bills, right?
Right,
and your
right.
mortgage and your food. But we don't think of our energy that way, but it's the same thing. And so you have this storehouse of energy, and I like to kind of think of it at a scale of 0 to 100. So every morning, I actually get up in the morning. This is one of my favorite love dares that I do, love practices. It really actually helped me stop overgiving. And every morning, I check in on my energy tank. And I say, okay, where is my energy from a scale of 0 to 100, almost like I'm dipping a little magic dipstick to see how much I actually have to give. And if my dipstick is less than 50%, I know that if I give, I'm going to be serving for my reserves. And just like a gas tank or a phone battery, it always takes longer to charge up when you've gone below that kind of half tank thing. Same with us. So what we want to be doing is actually only serving and giving when we're 50 and above. And so what I do every morning when I, because I'm usually around 65 to 75. The goal is to be up to 75 and above, which means you have an abundance to give. I follow up that dipstick with a question of, what do I need to receive today? And then my inner wisdom says what I need, and whatever I need, I make sure I get that so that I can also give.
Well, what is it that you receive? I mean, is it stopping and doing like deep breathing, or is it getting yourself a cup of coffee? What is it?
Well, it varies, and I have to say that my inner wisdom never says you need a 7-day trip to Tahiti.
Right.
It's never something like that. But this morning, for example, I woke up, and it was unconditional love. Mm. And about 7 days, well, about 2 weeks ago, I woke up, and it was peace. And I was actually living in Brooklyn at the time because I've been traveling around the country talking and speaking and kind of living in different cities while I'm doing it. And I was living in Brooklyn, and you can imagine Brooklyn's a little noisy, has a lot going on. And I remember that day I had a talk to give at NYU, and I was on my way to the talk, and I was with my partner Noah and my assistant, and they were supposed to be the ones that were supposed to figure out how we were going to get to NYU from Brooklyn. And we get down to go, you know, to the subway, and neither of them know what to do. And they're like walking around in circles, and normally I would get very stressed out about that, and I would start to overdo. I would take control. I would take charge. And I'd be, I'll figure it out. Give me the phone. And instead of doing it, I actually stopped right there on the street and said, oh, I'm supposed to receive peace. Closed my eyes and literally just started breathing and meditating, exactly what you said, right in the middle of downtown Brooklyn. And they eventually figured it out. I got on the train. I went and done my thing, and I was full enough to actually give to that room of people, which I would not have been had I taken over control in that moment.
I mean, there is something to be said for pull the mask down for yourself before you help someone else on the airplane type of thing. I have noticed that if just 20 minutes of deep relaxation therapy, where it's like deep, deep meditation, will restore my mood for the entire day, no matter what situation I'm in, 30 minutes turns into an hour because it feels so good, that it makes my entire, it's like pressing the reset button on my mood, brain, body, relationships, everything that day. It definitely does. And I am, by the way, inviting our listeners into this conversation because I definitely want to hear from you as well. What are your challenges with giving to yourself? What perspective do you have around this conversation? 818-985-KPFK is the phone number here. So if you have this place of just short amounts of giving to yourself, how do you deal with not feeling that you're selfish or narcissistic or deserving of anything like that?
Or guilty.
Guilty, that's the word.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That one too. I mean, that's what happens. Most of us start giving to ourselves, and then we feel like we should be doing something else. or we're ignoring something else. And you know, first of all, it starts with small practices like the one that I just mentioned of actually asking yourself every day what you need to receive and then start getting into the practice of actually receiving and practicing receiving and valuing receiving. You know, we all talk about how much we want to relax. We want to go spend time at the beach. We have these like grand, you know, grand dreams of like spending 7 days at the beach. But then when it really comes down to it, we don't really value relaxing. Like you were just saying, Lisa, that you know you will take 30 minutes and go for a walk, or you'll take 20 minutes and restart. I call it a harmony break.
I had to learn that. Yes,
we had to learn it, right?
Uh-huh.
Rather than to learn how to value it.
And yeah.
As a recovering achievement junkie, I was like the worst relaxer in the entire world. Like I didn't actually know how to do it, so I couldn't downshift from my life. You know, it was always, you know, 24/7, Mach 7, like just fast, 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 fast. So I think part of it is actually us as women especially stop giving lip service to the fact that we want to relax and start actually valuing resting as actually doing something. Resting is doing something.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. I really appreciate this conversation from a different perspective also. I was speaking with a friend of mine before I came into the studio today. And she divorced after 17 years, and she was learning how to fall back in love with herself, mm-hmm. and how to become her own best friend, and how to be in that place of being fine with being alone. And it wasn't from a place of loneliness, but from a place of being happy with it and giving to herself and so forth. Have you addressed that conversation with women who are, you know, single again or single at 60, those types of things?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the way that I think about self-love and this kind of, you know, this is a situation I found myself in 10 years ago when my 15-year relationship ended and I was on the receiving end of that broken engagement, a.k.a. fiancé broke up with me on the way to engagement party.
Nice. Mm.
Yeah, so it was a big, one of those big aha, you know, kind of, you know, wake-up moments. And I found myself having to be really honestly so with myself of how did a smart woman end up here? So here I was, smart woman, super self-confident, getting my MBA, big job, big house, lots of friends, and this voice spoke to me, and I'll never forget it, like it was like yesterday. Of course, it was my inner wisdom. It was my divine downline. And it said to me, well, Christine, you have a lot of self-esteem, but you don't love yourself.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's true. You know, when you hear a truth, you're like, okay, that's true.
Right,
and
right.
And so I started asking my friends, you know, did they know what self-love was? And, of course, none of them had any clue because they were, you know, as big of a disaster in their relationships as I was. And so I asked my older relatives, and their answers were worse. They're just like, honey, just be happy. Just be happy. And I'm like, that's not working.
How does that?
That's not working, obviously, because I'm obviously, I almost not only married the wrong person, I almost created the wrong life for myself. So then I started going to spiritual centers, and they started talking about self-love, and I started feeling it, but no one could really tell me what it was. And it wasn't practical. It was very, like, etheric and theoretical and like, oh, yes, love yourself. And so over the last 10 years, I've basically dedicated my life to answering the question, how do you love yourself and what does that look like? And so one of the things that you're talking about with women when they find themselves to be single and when they find themselves, I think, is a really great time to really deepen their branch. I think of self-love as 10 branches, and one of those branches is self-honor and self-respect, which is all about treating yourself as a sacred being and only putting yourself in relationships that reflect that same sacredness.
So this is the art of being instead of the art of doing. And that is a full conversation because it's what, you know, how often do you have a free day and you say, okay, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. I found myself saying that this weekend going, all right, we have nothing to do today. So what do you want to do? Rather than how are we going to be with no appointments, no schedules, let's just be. And it was great because I wound up playing Barbies with my daughter.
Oh, my gosh. That is so fun. Well, and that's part of self-love. I think there's a way in which our 3-year-olds and our 4-year-olds and our 5-year-olds and our 6- and 7-year-olds, like, they have gotten lost. And I know for a lot of us overdoers and overachievers and people, you know, I know you love your work. I love my work. It's really good work to do in the world. And I remember last year I just hit a wall where my self-pleasure branch, which is one of the 10 branches of self-love, I think had basically been almost broken off my self-love tree. Because I think of self-love like a tree, and it has these 10 branches. And self-pleasure was severely starving. And what I realized is that even though I now did what I loved for my work and for my job, I get to travel the world, teach self-love, do retreats, et cetera, there was this part of me that was like, I just want to be a girl and go to the movies, eat ice cream cones, and read Narnia books in bed. And I don't care about helping anybody with their spiritual development today. I just want to play Barbies, right? That's all I want to do.
Yep.
And I realized that I had been starving for joy because I was so focused on giving. And here's the point, I was overgiving. I was giving, and it was my passion to give. But there was this piece of me that just was like, Christine, you're just a girl, too, and let's just go have fun to have fun. And so I made that my focus for an entire year to grow my self-pleasure, and I made a promise to myself, a self-love promise, that no matter how much work there was to do, I would always find time for fun. And so what happened for me, and this happens whenever you make a self-love promise, is that in the moments when it's hard to choose the loving act, which is really what we're talking about here, because we all know how to love ourselves. Everyone on this call, you and me, Lisa, we all know how to love ourselves. We can't give ourselves permission to choose the loving act. And so my self-love promise to always have fun no matter how much work there was to do, in the moments when I wanted to go into overgiving, overworking, that best friend voice came in and said, remember that promise you made, and I was able to give myself permission to actually just do what was fun.
Fun and joy. Joy is something that we've kind of gotten robbed from recently from all the news about the economy and what's looming into our future of losing, you know, jobs and downsizing and so forth. There has not been a lot of permission for joy in the conversation, the cultural conversation lately. It's been more about survival. Well, that is a good point. But joy doesn't have to cost anything.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
It's very inexpensive. And I actually believe that we need joy to survive and we need love to survive. And those two things actually, you know, you can get those for free a lot of times.
Well, also, what's it costing you to not have it? I mean, that one of the things that you're mentioning here that I love bringing the conversation into practicality, but when you have joy in your life, you have better health because mm-hmm. it lowers your blood pressure. It reminds you to be focused on your breath and your being and your body and your health, and you want to take care of yourself better and eat better foods and so forth. I mean, overall, health-wise, it's a really good idea to pay attention to you. Quite often, we pay attention to the neck up and thinking and thinking and thinking and not very much to what's going on with our bodies. What do our bodies need? What do they need more of, less of? And how is that working for us? And, 30 minutes of exercise will help you with that, I think. No matter what it is, you could lay on your bed and stretch. If it's exercise, it's good in a way. And that's, I think, so let's get into some topics or some tips on ideas of giving to yourself. What are some really good practical ideas of what it means to give to yourself and to bring more joy into your life?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's like I remember when I was like, oh my gosh, I'm joy starved, and then I realized, oh my gosh, I don't even remember what brings me joy. I didn't remember. I really didn't. And so one thing that you can do, and I call these daring acts of love, as I mentioned for the last 10 years, I've been basically practicing on myself. I'm like a walking, talking self-love experiment of how to actually make it practical. And so what I did is I created what's called a joy portrait. And a joy portrait is super simple. You get a piece of paper and some crayons and some markers, and you sit down and you write the word joy in the middle of your paper. And why it's important to have crayons and markers is because we also want to activate the little person inside of you who actually remembers how. And most of us get freaked out when it talks. We talk about, like, art. This is not art. This is, if you know how to pick up a crayon and you could color when you were three, you can do this. So you pick up the piece of paper, write joy in the middle, and then start writing down all the things that just make you happy.
Good idea.
You love to do that actually generate joy. And then you go backwards in your life. So, you know, you can go to the present time, then go back 10 years, back 10 years, back until you're like 3 years old again. And you don't stop until that whole page is filled up with joy.
Oh, what was on your joy portrait?
Well, there were all kinds of things on my joy portrait. Things like literally reading the Narnia books is one. Mm-hmm. Spending the day in bed reading a book from front to cover. I was the little girl who would go to the library, and I would get three books, and I would bring them all back the next day. And then I would get three more. I love, what brings me joy is drinking really great wine and having really great conversations. Obviously, I didn't do that when I was three. That was more like when I was 33 that joy piece started. I love going to Nordstrom's and just trying on hats. I love hats. They just make me so happy. And then I also love spending time with my two goddess daughters who are 9 and 10. Mm. And so yes. like this year when I was on my tour for my book and traveling and speaking all the time, I made time to have to send Lucy, who's 10, she came out to New York, and I flew her out to New York, and I took her to her first Broadway show, and we went to go see Annie. And we just spent the whole day walking around Times Square, and I filled up so much from spending the day with that little girl and going to see Annie and singing. It was so much fun.
Yep. I can imagine. Absolutely. Well, okay, once again, I've gotten some great perspectives here from the listeners. Let me know what brings you joy in your life. Give us a call, 818-985-KPFK. We're looking for joy tips. What brings you joy in your life? And whatever perspective you're coming from, this is just a great way to remind yourself to give. This is the practice of learning how to fall madly in love with yourself and not constantly be giving. Now, in terms of one of the greatest quotes I heard once was from Oprah, and she said one of the greatest ways to self-healing is to give to someone else. Now, in that way, I see it as giving back to yourself. When you are volunteering at a rescue facility or building homes or in a center of any kind, when you're giving time, when you're helping other people, I do believe that it does give back to yourself in many ways, in a different form of giving. And I think that joy shows up in different ways. Christine, do you think the same?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, love, there's a rule of love, and that rule is love creates more love. It always does. And so when we're in community with people and we're giving from a place of being full and being loved, it creates more love. But when you're giving from a place of resentment, from guilt, from obligation, from depletion, all of those places actually don't create more love. That energy is not pure love. It gets tainted with all that stuff, obligation, resentment. I mean, just think of any time that someone did something for you out of obligation or guilt.
Right,
How that felt. And so that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about stopping giving. It's about really getting clear about where you're giving for. And it's like I almost have inside of me now like a little tripwire that goes off when I can feel guilt, obligation, or, pressure that I'm doing something from that place. And, you know, I just want to be honest, like I'm still, I'm a recovering achievement junkie because I'm still learning how to do all of this. And so it's not about being perfect. There's no day that someday you're going to wake up and you're going to be like, okay, I love myself. I'm complete. That isn't how self-love works. Self-love is a choice in every moment of every day. And because our culture is so built on the message of you're not enough, that's how basically this capitalistic structure works, is we keep consuming, right? It's really hard for us to stop. And one way that we really can do that is really cultivating a practice of self-love and understanding where you're really good at self-love. So if you already have a lot of self-esteem or a lot of self-pleasure or self-compassion, or maybe for you self-compassion is really difficult and you're really critical on yourself, or maybe self-pleasure is really difficult. And just starting to be aware of that, and so in the moment being able to choose love instead of guilt, shame, fear, obligation, resentment, pressure, judgment, criticism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Very, very cool. And there's a lot of great comments coming in about what brings people joy, the smell of roses. I did that the other day. I stopped and smelled a rose, in a beautiful rose in someone's garden. Putting your feet in the sand, toes in the sand, a walk on the beach, laughter. Wow, laughter will add oxygen to the brain. It's great. A baby's smile. That's great. Scented candles, performing arts, hugs, kisses, beautiful art, all those things. Well, this conversation is hopefully a reminder for people to remember to bring joy back into their lives, to give to themselves, men and women, by the way, where we have gotten into a place of a doing society. It is just a great reminder to be and to be in that place of love and satisfaction with yourself. So
Yeah. And I can add one here too, Lisa. When you notice yourself feeling frustrated or feeling sad or feeling kind of crunchy and contracted, it usually is an indication that you're starving and you need some joy or need some beauty. And so one of my love dares is to go out and collect evidence of love. So you take yourself on a love walk, and you go out and you look for evidence of love, and then you capture it on your phone, and then you Facebook it, or you capture it on your phone with your photos, or you can write it down, or just even just go out and look for it. And within 10 minutes, you will change your whole perspective on your life, because you'll actually see evidence of love, beauty, and joy, and it will fill you up, and it will shift your experience.
Beautiful. Well, thank you. Great idea. Good ideas. And and if you find yourself in a place of being able to write that joy portrait, that is a great idea. I already wrote mine. All right. Thank you so much, Christine. Again, the name of the book is called Madly in Love with Me, The Daring Adventure of Becoming Your Own Best Friend. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
All right. Bye. All right. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Aware Show. This is Lisa Garr, and we'll be right back.